Welcome, everybody. Welcome, everybody, to episode 3, the Josabot podcast. We're here today joined by none other than Dr. Hudson, a proud graduate of University of Maryland, University of Houston, Texas A&M, Texas State University, just so that I can catch my breath. He's also a Knight of Columbus, if you know what that is. He's got a lot of information. This man right here, get ready, because he's going to school you on a lot of knowledge. And, you know, one of the most humblest guys I've ever met. Welcome, Dr. Hudson.
Well, thank you very much. How are you today?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. Thank you for being here. Awesome. Thank you for being here. It's a pleasure having you here. And let's go ahead and get started. Dr. Hudson, how's your day going?
Well, like I told the kids at school, hooray, it's Friday.
No, I thought it was the day before Saturday.
Well, tomorrow I have to go back to work again. I've got a phone call with a business associate in China at 7 a.m. my time. And then I've got some errands to run and some grading to do. So, no, it doesn't matter.
Man, so you're a teacher?
At present, yes. Well, we're all teachers.
We're all teachers. And tell me a little bit about, University of Maryland, University of Houston, Texas A&M, Texas State University. I mean, tell me a little bit of all of those credentials that you currently have.
Do you want to start at the beginning or start at the end?
Wherever you like.
The middle is a good place. Don't worry. University of Maryland, Education Administration with Cultural Studies, Doctorate, Master's Curriculum Instruction from University of Houston, Mid-Management Certification from Texas A&M, Public Administration with a minor in Government from, well, it used to be Southwest Texas State University, which is Texas State University right now. And let me put it this way. When I was working in education and doing my master's, it dawned on me that you could do, instead of having to do in-servicing X number of hours each year, you could take 2 college courses each semester and actually get more points than you wanted. So,
interesting.
Why not basically get the college degrees? And besides that, after the bachelor's degree, everything else was kind of fun.
So, you obviously had to do some leveling courses on a yearly basis. You were already employed and you're getting some hours continuing education, right? And mm-hmm. At which point it dawned on you that, you know what, if you take those 2 classes, you get the credit and then some. How does that work?
Well, I guess I opened my big mouth and I need to explain. I actually started my life as a nurse. So I want to be a nurse educator. So I was in Houston working at that point. I was working at St. Joseph's Hospital. And I went, okay, I want to be a nurse educator. So I went to University of Houston and said, what do I need to be a nurse educator? I said, well, you need a master's degree in education. I found out later they lied to me, but that's okay. So I started the program and they went, well, now you need to get your teaching certificate. And I went, I need to do what? And I was very lucky at the time because I could work weekends. I went to work at 3:30 in the afternoon, get off the next morning at 7:30. So I worked 2 double shifts and they paid me for 40 hours. So I worked 8 hours off, 16, which is 32, and got paid for 40. Not stupid. So that was, you know, Friday afternoon, Saturday, Sunday. I only need like 3 to 4 hours of sleep. Anyway, mm-hmm. Got up and basically taught full time. And at that time in Texas, I think it still is, if you teach for 2 years, you can sit for the exam. And if you pass it, you got your certificate. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. But in the meantime, I was working critical care, ICU, trauma. Kids were lying down and dying on me. And I discovered I liked them standing up and talking to me. So I've gone back to nursing when I had to, when times were slim and needed money. Mm-hmm. But most of my stuff has been sent toward education, working special ed, administration working with at-risk kids, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I'm working at-risk kids since 1984.
Interesting. And so you fell in love with the teaching profession as opposed to the nursing profession.
Yeah, besides that, it's a lot easier to walk around a classroom than it is to stay on your feet for 12 hours and chasing up to 24 or 40 patients or an ICU too that are very sick.
Shout out to all my nurses out there listening. My wife is a nurse herself, and I think we've had this conversation where, you know, being a nurse right now in this time of our lifetimes, you know, where COVID is so prevalent, it's hard. It's hard because there's a lot of fear of the unknown, not knowing what you're catching, if you're catching something, and then bringing it home to your family and loved ones. So, which leads me to my next question. If you were still a nurse, let's go back to when you were nursing. If COVID hit then, would you still take the path of going into education, or would you say, you know what, I need to do something. I need to be the best nurse I can be to try to defeat this COVID.
The best way to answer that is with a story. Mm-hmm. In 1984, I was assigned, I actually went down to a med-surg floor because I was asked to do overflow. The patient on the floor, unfortunately, because he was poor, had come to us from Rio de Janeiro, where he was a gigolo. He had basically untreatable tuberculosis, had untreatable syphilis, had untreatable gonorrhea, and doctor did not even have any type of respiratory or anything else. And I basically fought for the patient, getting all the precautions we need to do and the other nurses. I still think as a nurse, once you learn them, and your wife can tell you what SOPI means, subjective, objective assessment, plan, implementation, evaluation. And you never lose that training once you've gotten it. That's how you plan everything. Mm-hmm. So the answer is I've never left nursing. My license is still current.
Wow. That's very interesting. So in that 80s, I mean, if I think about what I've read, what I've seen regarding what was prevalent in the 80s, I mean, there was a big scare in regards to the AIDS movement.
Oh, I left that off. Yeah, he was the first AIDS patient in Houston, Texas also.
Mm-hmm. So very same fear, right? Because again, mm-hmm. it was very unknown, and COVID right now is very unknown. So there's a big fear, but we're understanding it as we move forward.
Exactly. And you basically just follow your normal and your nursing protocols. And the nursing protocols are called nursing diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that he had respiratory problems. We knew that he had AIDS. We didn't know what AIDS was. We knew he had all these sexually transmitted diseases, STS. And so we basically treat him like a human being, his emotional support and everything else, good nutrition, good ventilation, making sure he was in a safe environment. Mm-hmm. And they took care of him as a patient, a human. Yeah. Same with COVID.
You know, you bring up an interesting point. And the most important thing is being aware. And one thing that I know is common sense usually prevails for the most part. So treating individuals as a human being takes precedence. And
most definitely, you recognize their self, their identity. And my nursing school was a Catholic school. So it was very much about the wealth of the individual as an individual is the creation of God. Sister Clarissa Roy's model. And it's very true. You treat people as people.
You know, and that brings me to my next topic of conversation, because in our current state right now, personal story, insurance, not having insurance, causes individuals to be seen in a different light, you know, and what can be treated or what cannot be treated because of insurance or not insurance causes a healthcare entity as a whole to at times disregard what we just talked about, treating individuals for human beings.
I agree with you. I think I'll probably make some of your listeners very angry. If I do, I apologize profusely. To me, one of the flaws I see within the United States, well, let me preface it with this. I've now lived on four continents. The United States has the highest cost healthcare in the world. Yet of all the industrial nations, we have more fetal deaths than any other country in the world. Our minorities die almost twice to three times the rate of, quote, whites. We're based on a capitalistic system. If you can't pay it, you don't get it. And I'm saying this because a lot of my students in the last several months with the election stuff, well, what's socialism? You know, it's going to communism, right? No. Socialism means the government takes over some of the cost. Yes, you pay taxes. But give me an example. In Kosovo, in Germany, Macedonia, Greece, I take high blood pressure medicine. My medicine over there was $3 for 3 months.
Wait, say that again.
$3 for 3 months worth of medication. Wow. In the United States, it's $36 for 3 months. And that's with insurance.
Wow.
I could go in, and if I, you know, so I got a flu shot. My flu shot was €1, about $1.30. Mm-hmm. Here, it's like $30 and $40. My hospital room, less than $15 a day. Here, it's in the thousands. Mm-hmm. I think we're hurting ourselves. And the problem is, there's some people that we're hurting more than that. We're telling people we don't care about them. And that's sad. One of the things I always try to tell my students is there's only one human race. Skin color, hair color, eye color, nothing else matters. If I took every quote race and I took off your skin and lined you up against the wall, I dare you to tell me who was who. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I think, although the United States is a great country, eventually it's going to bite us, you know where. And it's sad.
Yeah.
Because we've got this idea that if you're not like me, thanks. So I'll tell you one more story. When I was working with Governor David Hall's campaign up in Oklahoma, yes, he was a Democrat. I met a gentleman by the name of C.H. And C.H. told us the story of his trip to New York. Now, C.H. had been a sharecropper. He loved his overalls. He loved his clodhoppers. He looked like a farmer. Mm-hmm. He was one, flannel shirt. So he's walking around 66, 67th Street in New York, and he saw a restaurant. He walked in. The maitre d' was there, dressed prim and proper. You know, sir, you need to wear a coat and tie to come in here. Very rude. Mm-hmm. C.H. said thank you and walked away. About 4 o'clock in the afternoon, C.H. walked back in. The maitre d' was still there. And C.H. goes, may I please speak to your business, your building manager? Mm-hmm. Maitre d' got on the phone and says, there's some clodhopper here with a red flannel shirt and overalls. He wants to talk to the building manager? The guy goes, what? He's there already? I'll be right down. He said, Mr. C.H., it's so nice to see you again. So nice to talk to you, sir. Let me introduce our maitre d'. He goes, we've met. And then he goes to the Mr. C.H. just bought the entire building. C.H. turned to the gentleman and said, and you, young man, are fired.
Wow.
We have to stop judging people by what we think they are.
Right.
And we need to start judging people by what we see in their eyes and right. What we tell who they are. Anyway, that's my 2 cents.
Well, you know, it's funny, interesting that you say that, because when I met you, I had zero knowledge about you. All these universities that we spoke about, you know, I had no clue. However, one of the first conversations, you know, was a very humble conversation, and we were just discussing life in general, just, you know, dancing, our hobbies, stuff like that. Came to find out you do a little bit of dancing yourself. And I mean, I didn't know much about that, but it's a very, very, very talented thing. What is it? What's the type of dancing that you're into, sir?
Oh, actually, it's two types. I did open ballroom, international series, which is called Modern, which is waltz, foxtrot, tango, quickstep, Viennese waltz. And I was one division off world championship or the world's masters in country and western.
Right. Wow, man. It's you know, when you actually take the time to get to know people, you learn so much about the world. You learn so much about culturation and understanding views. That I think that's one of the biggest key things that we're trying to do here with this podcast is just provide different views. And we had this conversation about the ideology of being American, not an ethnicity, but the ideology. So at times what I feel is missing, and this is just my personal opinion, is that understanding of different cultures. I believe I spoke to the bit of, you know, being in a high school with different cultures, and that has really opened my horizons on a big, on a worldly view. So, you know, you said you've lived in four continents. You know, tell me a little bit about that, sir.
Well, the United States, North America is one.
Yeah.
South America, China, the Philippines. I actually have a house in the Philippines. Kosovo, which is in Eastern Europe. Traveled quite a bit in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this way the food's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Funny you say that. I mean, one place I really want to go to is either going to be to India, because I hear the food's good as well. And it's a very, what I keep on hearing, a very genuine place to visit. And very, somebody told me it's the land of God. There's a place in South India.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. India is wonderful. I loved garlic naan, but bring that up. Mm-hmm. There's an Indian restaurant I have not tried yet off of Bicentennial in Nolana. There's a Pakistani restaurant in Nolana. There's a Thai restaurant, the Red Pepper, mm-hmm. off of Ware Road, which I know the chef there.
Uh-huh.
So we're going, you know, I say, okay, make whatever you want to make. I don't care. It's beautiful. I know him and his wife.
You do that too.
Yeah.
You just tell them, you know what, bring me whatever it is that you think I would like.
That's it.
I do the exact same thing. True story. I was just, I, you know, I get tired of seeing the menu and there's all these options and so forth. And I, like, my eyes just go cross-eyed and I'm looking and I'm like, I can't decide. So I usually do the same thing. I tell the waitress or the waiter, you know what? It's on you. If I love it, your tip is much better.
Well, with Pyro, you just basically go, okay, what's Pyro making tonight? Mm-hmm. at the Thai restaurant. And actually, Pyro's an interesting person. He came, his wife came down here as a nurse practitioner, mm-hmm. and was working at one of the major hospitals. She's offered a job. And she and Pyro came down. He had been a chef at one of the top restaurants in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Started the restaurant here. He's got his regulars. It's phenomenal. His wife is always there greeting. She's no longer working nurse practitioner, but they're the nicest people. And their food is authentic Thai.
Right.
And it really is Thai food. So there's all these little, if you get to know people, there's all these wonderful things about them that you discover.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I was in one of the Chinese restaurants and I was using chopsticks and the waitress came up who was from China. We started talking about it. She goes, you do that very well. And I said, well, I've been doing it since I was 14. She goes, oh, were you in China? And we started talking about me being in China.
Mm-hmm.
She had actually lived about 100, her home was 150 miles from one of my cities I lived in.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just take time to meet people.
Absolutely. So One of the things I'm a big, I don't know if you know this, but I used to be a DJ.
So did I.
You did.
I paid my way through, part of my way through college as a DJ, bartender, and as a tennis pro.
Did you follow through any of those at bars and clubs or?
I did music for a ballroom in country and western. It was a collection. I had my little board that had, you know, basically the four major pots and going up there and 16 lines going in. That's about it.
Take me back. About what year were you DJing?
I worked the market in Wichita Falls 1973 to 1975, and actually had a following of close to almost 6 million people, according to the ratings. Uh-huh. And then in San Marcos at Texas State, I worked their weekend show. So I'm not quite sure what that is. So that was in 1972 until about 1981.
Where does this take you?
Basically back to the 70s, but you know, we used to dance at that, and there used to be a place called, what was it called? In San Marcos, I can't remember, it was a cat or something like that, off of the square. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the songs you basically did a belly rub to.
Now, for our viewers, is that a very loose dance, or is that one of those close dances?
Well, very close up dances. You just basically move your feet or try to.
Steely Dan, funny story. When I first started teaching, one of my colleagues, his first name was Steely, and when I asked him where did his name come from, he says my mother loves Steely Dan. I was never a Steely Dan follower. We're talking about 2008, and to that point, I'm listening to hip hop. I'm listening to reggaeton, and I never once picked up a 70s album, right? So when he tells me that, I'm completely clueless as to what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to today, you know, about 4 years ago, I met my wife. And, you know, one of the first things that her and I did was I took her out to a cover band. And this cover band was an Eagles cover band. I'm over here thinking, you know what? You know, it'll be a nice time, you know. Let's see if you know some of the music, right? She is singing every single one of those songs. The only song I'm singing is Hotel California.
Oh, my goodness. Did you know Glenn Campbell actually, well, it's Glenn Campbell, Hotel California. Uh-huh. First thing you said, Eagles. I went, okay, witchy woman. That's another story.
Oh man, it's great to be cultured in so many different ways, and music is one of them. So as I was saying, like, I only knew one song of Eagles, and that was Hotel California. But when you're looking at Eagles, they have a collection of hits, and Witchy Woman is one of them.
It's one of their platinums. Yeah,
let me see if I can play this real quick.
There you go.
And every song is a hit. Journey, same thing. Every song is a hit. Fleetwood Mac, Miller. Steve Miller.
You know, you go basically go through a lot of things. So at that time, it's funny, when I was in Wichita or in college, I actually was working country and western. Mm-hmm. And so I'd gone from easy listening to jazz to news to country and western.
Right.
Actually, rock was somewhere in the middle, country and western. I had to play country, Hotel California so many times I got to hate it. Anyway, but yeah, so it's, you know, like I tell the kids, it's like, now there's only one genre I really don't like. I don't like gangster rap because of the fun it makes to people.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like rap.
Mm-hmm. What type of rap do you listen to?
That's the problem. Don't ask me a lot of names.
Right.
But anything from about the second century up to present, I probably listen to.
Okay.
And if I like it, I like it.
Right on.
So it's, I actually was in, I was a trained musician in high school and junior high. I was offered a music scholarship and I decided to do medicine instead.
What, so, The one song I was listening to today, actually, in the morning, was this song right here. Do you recognize that one?
I recognize, I don't remember the name. But very good, it is a good guitar.
That's Ice Cube.
I haven't heard that for a long time.
It was a good day. And again, if you can jive, I mean, if you can vibe to it, if you can have a good time to it, you know, it's really good music. So moving forward, you know, we talk about music, we talk about where you've been, and you know, we're still in the 70s, and in the 70s, we're talking about A Galaxy Far, Far Away. There was an interesting movie that was out there, and that goes by the name of Star Wars. What do you recall about Star Wars?
I'm going to talk about Spaceballs.
Anyway. I think that one came in the 80s. Fast forward to the 80s, right?
Yes.
What do you recall about Star Wars? The only reason I ask is because tonight's movie night for me and my family, and we're going to watch The Mandalorian, and that has been part of the introduction of myself to Star Wars. I think I'm like, I'm barely getting into the know of this galaxy, of this Star Wars. I fall asleep almost every single episode.
My son fell asleep on Star Wars number 3. Anyway, long story. Actually, Star Wars number 4, Return of the Jedi. I met a real cute blonde in college, and I was driving up to Austin, and we looked over and we couldn't figure out what to do. And the movie theater in Austin had a big crowd of 35. I went, "Oh, let's go to the movie." Mm-hmm. But it said Star Wars, and I know Star Wars was. It was the first day of Star Wars. So I saw Star Wars number 4, Return of the Jedi, the first day it was released in Texas. And I think I've seen that movie now at least, God, close to 20 times. I even know where the errors are. I could show you my phone, which has almost all the Star Wars songs on it.
So in A Galaxy Far, Far Away, Stephen Hudson, college student, is going with a very cute blonde to the movies. Proceed.
Well, that was basically it. That was our first and last date. She was cute. I was in San Marcos at this point, and at San Marcos, and at that point, we were number 2 in the United States as far as beautiful women on campus. So it's interesting. Several years later, I actually married a girl. My first marriage was from San Marcos, and we went back for what's called the Cancer Bowl, which is one of my fraternities puts on, Alpha Kappa Psi, and it goes for cancer research, MD Anderson. And so we're walking around, and Yvonne, my wife, goes, "Honey, look at all the beautiful women around here." I went, first question, I said, "Where are we, dear?" You know, enough said.
Yeah.
So I've been I've been, by the time I was about 12 years old, 13, May 13th, I had read every science fiction book in the Macon Public Library.
Wow.
And so Asimov, Heinlein, Bradbury, you name one of them, fell in love with the trilogy, basically from Asimov. In fact, it's funny because there's actually 9 books that go with R. Daniel, the robot. And that's, you know, in the series. So as very great, so Star Wars is just exactly up my area. I'm also a Whovian.
What does that mean? Please explain.
Oh, my goodness. You don't know who Whovian is.
No, I do not.
You haven't talked to Manny, obviously. Whovian is Doctor Who.
Okay.
With the TARDIS, the little blue call box. Uh-huh. And so I've watched most of the Doctors, although I came in with Doctor number 5. You always come in the Doctor you like. So... very much of that, very much Red Dwarfs, which is another British telling story, but with an android is one of the things going on. Mm-hmm. Very much into sci-fi.
I try to get into sci-fi. My wife loves it. I mean, obviously she's a big science geek. And most recently, we had this conversation where she goes, "You know what? Let's watch The Big Bang Theory."
Well, okay.
I started watching it. You know, unbeknownst to me, I find it very humorous, very funny. I'm here laughing and I'm watching the shows with her. But I feel like I'm behind the curve. I mean, like, why am I barely discovering, you know, Star Wars, The Big Bang Theory? I have not seen Doctor Who, although Manny does tell me a lot about it. But I mean, is that wrong? Is that blasphemous?
No, it just means you have another interest area. Here's what got me interested in. It's funny. Let me use an example. Jules Verne, 20,000 Leagues mm-hmm. Under the Sea. They talk about the submarine, the Nautilus, is using an unknown power that generates great heat and is able to last for thousands of years. What's the power? Mm-hmm. Nuclear energy. So you end up having these parallels with things going on.
Right.
I learned my planets. You know, I learned about Ganymede. I learned about Io. I learned about, you know, all different things going on. And one of my other people I started reading when I was about 14 is E.E. Doc Smith. That's mm-hmm. capital E, Doc Smith, mm-hmm. was an engineer. And they're screwy stories from the 1930s and 40s. But it's a Lensman series where you have, you know, good and evil. And of course, mm-hmm. good wins. So there's all different things going on there. And that led to, for example, Pierce Anthony, he's written several series. He's written the tarot series. The first book I ever read was Magosphere.
Mm-hmm.
He also has written a thing called the Xanth series, where it's mm-hmm. a play on words, puns, mm-hmm. like butterfly, which is a pad of butter that actually flies, a bed bug, a bug under the bed. Centaurs, you know, you name it. So it opens up this huge world of wonder
mm-hmm.
for a child thing. So to me, fantasy, science fiction, the real world kind of goes together.
Right.
And like I tell people, they go, okay, so you've obviously been flying saucers, right? I went, no, but I don't disbelieve in them either.
You know,
yeah, who knows what's out there?
Exactly, and that's an interesting parallel and a lead to another topic where, you know, do you really have to see it to believe it? Faith it being one of them. You know, when we talk about faith in the Christian realm, you know, we talk about never questioning, but yet believing and understanding and walking in the path.
You actually are, you're kind of quoting Kierkegaard,
uh-huh.
who says, you stand on the precipice. You must take the leap of faith to understand God.
Mm-hmm.
You can't prove him, you can't taste him, you can't see him. Like Bernard, who basically said, you have to see, hear, whatever, the Missourian of the group. But you say you have to take the leap of faith.
Right.
And it's the same with anything. I mean, let's face it, when they did Little Boy and Big Boy, the two atomic bombs, mm-hmm. that was a leap of faith. They didn't know if it was going to work or not. Well, they did know that Germany was about 6 months ahead of us. They had to get rid of all the heavy water.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, you have to trust.
Correct. And that's what we at times fail to understand and trust in the process. You know, we currently, you know, in 2020, we've become accustomed to, let me click, let me order, and I should have it in 2 days. And if I don't get it in 2 days, I'm going to blow my mind here, and I'm going to, you know, cause a ruckus, and I need to speak to your manager, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I become a Karen. but nonetheless, man, I mean, oftentimes we're finding these situations. I mean, perfect example of what we're doing right now, you know, schools and COVID and trusting the process and trying to understand what's happening. I mean, there's so many parallels when we talk about this conversation and this topic. So, you know, at the highest level, we need to trust that our leaders are, you know, we holding them accountable so that they can do the best for us in our best interest. That's what we hope and pray.
I think you're right, but I also think it goes something deeper than that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to hold yourself accountable for being rational.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of conspiracy theories. There's a lot of lies going on. There's a lot of people that, for some reason or other, believe in something they know can't be factual, yet they really are. I actually have an acquaintance of mine. She has two doctorates, a doctorate in psychology and an OD.
Mm-hmm.
Yet she swears up and down that the landing on the moon was fake and the earth is flat.
Interesting.
I mean, it's like, Lee, you have two PhDs or one PhD and one OD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this doesn't make sense. Oh no, I know it is. So I just listen and go from there.
Hey, if you want to say that 2 + 2 = 5, you go right ahead. I'm not going to waste my energy.
Actually, it's 11. Or no, it's 101. If you do base two, it's, you know, binary. Yes.
Oh man. So, you know, we also introduced you earlier in the podcast about you being a part of the Knights of Columbus. That's a fraternity. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes and no.
Okay. More based on faith, correct?
Okay. This is a commercial, so I'll give you guys a commercial.
All right.
In 1883, there was a lot of persecution of the Catholics. And in New Haven, Connecticut, there was a priest, Father McGivney, and he saw this going on. So he called all the leaders in the town and said, tell you what, you all give me $1,000, and when you die, I'll make sure your family gets $10,000. And that was the founding of the Knights of Columbus. The Knights of Columbus has two jobs, and I've just created the first one. We're the oldest insurance company in North America, and we have never had a blemish on us. We actually have the highest rating of any insurance company in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's only for our members or for the children members or family members. The other job we do is that we are knights in Our Lady, Mother Mary's name. Mm-hmm. We're Mary's knights. So our other job is to protect the church and do what the priest needs in order to meet the needs of the church.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if some of your followers have seen this, but a lot of times when they go to a Catholic church, they'll see guys wearing a little vest, or they stand up with a priest and the priest is giving the Eucharist.
Right.
And there's two guys on both sides. What they're doing is they're making sure people do take the Eucharist properly, making sure they show the reverence.
Mm-hmm.
Now they'll never be obnoxious or obstinate, you know, or whatever. We always try to be polite and very respectful.
Right.
But we're there to honor the church, Our Lady, and to protect what is the church. So family first, church second, and that's what God had it doing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, every year we give the Pope $1 million to do whatever he wants to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
When the hurricanes hit, the knights are the first one on the floor. In fact, when Katrina hit, we actually were there the next morning. We beat the Red Cross, giving people $6,000, or no, $4,000, then $6,000 two days later. Mm-hmm. To build their lives up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do. And all the money we raise, we're a C Corp. So all the money we raise goes to charity.
Okay.
And I mean, all the money we raise goes to charity.
Correct.
Council 3910 in Houston, we had a budget of close to $1.85 million. And every year that went to charity in our area.
See, and I always say this, education is a big part of how we're going to move forward in our lifetimes and into the future. And, you know, I'm glad that you given me an education lesson on the Knights of Columbus. What I did know was it was an organization that helps, that provides charity. However, I would think of Knights of Columbus. I would also think of the Shriners. I would also think of the Masons. So
the bad thing is, it's actually interesting. The Masons, well, the Shriners are actually part of the Masons. They're, there's four levels to Knights of Columbus. And if we use the Masons, there's, depending on which group you do, if you use Scottish Rite, there's 32 levels. If you do the York Rite, there's four levels. And then you end up going to be a Shriner. Mm-hmm. I'm a third degree knight, but I'm also a fourth degree, which means that I belong to two organizations. My council is third degree. My assembly is my fourth degree. They are separate, just like Shriners and Masons are.
Right.
But what's curious is the Masons, the Odd Men, the Eagles, the Foresters, they all try to destroy the Knights of Columbus, and they actually used to attack us. Mm-hmm. So we actually have what we call an outside guard, inside guard, or in the fourth degree, outside sentinel, inside sentinel, because in the 1800s and all the way up to about the 1950s, our meetings were attacked. Mm-hmm. So like I said, we're there to protect the church. But now we basically do what we can to help the church. We don't play wars anymore.
We're not playing those games anymore, right? But wow, and so it's...
Oh, one more thing. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, President Kennedy, was a fourth degree Knights of Columbus.
JFK.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Where were you when he got when he was assassinated? I'd like to know.
Mrs. Rocchio's class, Jackson Elementary, sixth grade, second row from the window, second chair. Announcement came on by Mr. Deere. 10:45, 10:48 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Students, we're sitting at home right now. There's been an incident in Dallas. Please go straight home. Do not stop. Your parents are waiting for you.
Wow. You know, we talk about events that impact you for a lifetime. That being one of them, 9/11 being another one.
9/11, I was in Guatemala, sitting at my desk, and the superintendent called me as a principal of a secondary school. Same thing with the shuttle crash.
Yes, the Challenger shuttle crash, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, these are definitely huge events in our lifetimes, and I mean, they make up, you know, one big thing that it does is it unites people for one main purpose, a human race.
I think that's true, but I also worry about why they're caused.
Mm-hmm.
It bothers me immensely to see a lot of the hatred, a lot of the misunderstandings. I came back to the United States after being 6 years away. And the last, got here June 19th, 2019. The vitriol that I've seen in people talking about political parties, mm-hmm. or whatever, has really worried me. Because I don't see a difference in your skin color, your religion thing. I think we all should work for the common good.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I'm seeing a lot of people that seem working for their own good and not the common good.
Well,
and I'm reminded of a history author who basically wrote the 10 things that led to the fall of Rome and compared the Rome and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We've done all 10.
It's only a matter of time.
Well, not every empire falls at one point or another.
Correct.
France, Rome, Greece, Great Britain, Spain.
So, you know, when we talk about all that, I mean, obviously there's certain items that need to be in play for something to collapse, right? And right now, I'm thinking the economy, I'm thinking the network. I mean, I'm the grid. And I'm thinking utilities. I mean, am I missing out on something?
I think that there was a statement by an author back about, I think it was like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. This is not how the United States ends with a bang, but with a whimper. I don't want to see the United States go, but I do know eventually it will. I think if nothing else, this last year has shown us where some of our flaws are. And I hope enough people are self-reflective. Mm-hmm. They can look and not point the finger, but try to say, okay, how am I coping with this? What am I doing? How do I feel about this? Why do I feel that way? Mm-hmm. Versus blaming somebody else for something. You can't, that's the old saying, when you point the finger at somebody, there's three more fingers pointing back at you. And all too often, it's easy to point the finger. Mm-hmm. I was reading a story today about a music mogul who basically decided to go on holiday, and he was Black. And he's in the airport getting a first class line, and a white middle class woman said, "You're in the wrong place." And he was gracious about it. Mm-hmm. And she kept insisting. Finally, he said, he wrote his whole thing and said, "I must have said the wrong thing. Or I know I said the wrong thing, but I had to say something." He did take some pictures. He did post on Facebook, of course. He was commended, 250,000, you know, hits, how bad he is. He goes, "No, I'm just a rich Black guy." But you can't judge. I mean, all Chinese kids are not good in math and science. I'm sorry. I taught them for years. All Italian guys are not members of the mafia. All Hispanics are not drug dealers. All Blacks are not gang members. All whites aren't rich. You know, related story. My son, he had a student in his class who was finally followed Islam. He said, "Daddy, he stinks." I said, "He smells?" He goes, "How do you know?" "Well, he's Muslim. He has to stink." So we sat down for about an hour and I said, I want to show you some pictures. So I showed him a lot of pictures. They were blondes, brunettes, redheads. Guys with beards and guys without beards.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they all were light skinned. I said, "And what religion do you think these people are?" "Oh, they're Christian or Catholic." I went, "These are all daddy's friends from Albania and Kosovo and Russia. They're all Muslims." "Because they don't look like Muslims." I said, "What does a Muslim look like?" We learn to judge the book not by its cover, but what's inside it.
Absolutely.
Beauty comes from the inside. Beauty is not on the outside. And if my students and if the people I'm with learn anything, that'd be my message.
Amen. That's a beautiful message. And most recently, you know, that interaction that you had with your son was a very similar interaction that I had with my daughter. I was able to see, look, I was reading on the doll test. And the doll test, for those of you that don't know, if all you got to go is go to YouTube, type in the doll test, and it's a research study where they present 3, 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds a Black doll and a white doll. And as I was showing my 8-year-old daughter this video, you know, the questions that were being asked to these children was just, which one's a nice one? Which one's a bad one? Which one's a good one? Which one's the ugly one? Etc. And almost immediately, man, like, I mean, a minute into that video, my daughter looks at me and she goes, "Dad," I said, "What's up, babe?" She says, "You know why these kids are reacting that way?" I said, "Why?" She goes, because adults treat each other like this. Adults cause this. Mm-hmm. I looked at her and I was like, wow. And in that moment, I tell this story often, but in that moment, I said, man, if an 8-year-old can get it, there's no reason why a 37-year-old cannot get it. There's no reason why a 50-year-old cannot get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, we need to remove our blinders and go back to the original message of, you know what, get to know people, collaborate, communicate, you know, create a plan of action so that you can move forward for your family.
You're absolutely right. When I taught sociology, one of the things we got on race, I told my students, I said, racism is hereditary.
Yeah.
And they immediately go, what? I went, yeah, you inherit it from your parents. Mm-hmm. And I honestly believe that. It's my son asked me the question the other day. They're currently in the Philippines when you come to the U.S. again. And he goes, Daddy, is it safe to come there? Because some people in the U.S. don't like me. Am I not American? I went, you're definitely an American. But they know all the everything that goes on with the election here and the other stuff and the racism. And people outside the United States are very tuned to the U.S. We're still the beacon on top of the hill. We need to act like the beacon.
What? That's deep. Yeah, you know, that's what I want for our listeners, honestly. Like, I think we keep on hitting the same message, but however, in a different perspective, in a different light. And, you know, I said this the other day, I said, man, you can be at the very top, but yet you can still feel lonely inside. But, you know, it's time to start filling in that cup with some positive messages, with some positive optimism, so that we can, you know, one, you know, be true to ourselves and be true to our family, and two, influence those around us so that we can have a better community, right? So, you know, I don't consider myself the most godliest person in the world or one, but I'm good with what I am and what I learn and what I practice, right? And it's always within myself. I don't have to be in a building to practice what I'm preaching. You know what I'm saying? I it's one with God. I know that deep inside of me, and that's okay, you know, because as long as you understand that you're at peace, there's nothing else that should bother you. However, we're living in a society where comments, likes, hashtags are causing people to react certain ways, causing people to lose an awareness of how they're reacting and just being ugly, right? So
yeah, I think everybody should read the book, Father, Son, Sister, Moon.
Father, Son, Sister, Moon.
Mm-hmm. Francis of Assisi was who it was. He basically, you actually paraphrased what he said very well. Boils down to accept yourself, love God, you can't help but love others.
Absolutely. You can't. You know, one of the things that I'm blessed with is I have a very understanding wife who balances me, because I could be very reactive at times, and she tells me, like, yo, why do you got to get so upset for certain things? And I'm like, yo, can't help myself, you know. But part of that, it's always going to be upbringing. The other part of that is the experiences and the criticism you have on yourself, I think. So I say it all often, I'm my own biggest critic. And
I think we all are, if we're honest with ourselves. The problem is, when you look in the mirror, what do you see? Mm-hmm. And the hardest thing to change is what's inside us.
Yes, that's deep.
Because we have a tendency to accept we've learned to accept certain ways we are. Remember when I first started teaching, I was yelling at kids. Didn't work. And this little, and I mean little, diminutive, I mean, she was like 4'9". Assistant superintendent walks into one of my graduate classes and was teaching us. And she walked in, and it was in, if you've ever been to University of Houston, it's what they call a kiva. It's a room with a room with one level sunken, and next level sunken, like a kiva Indian. Mm-hmm. And she came to the bottom and just raised her hand. And there's 180 people in there. And we're all talking. And eventually we got quiet. She sits sitting there and she goes, well, it works for graduate students just like it does for superintendents. I learned a big lesson. We have a tendency to think that we can change whatever. So I can tell my kids, I can't change you. We might argue about it, but I'll support whatever you believe, because you know what we have to do. I'm not going to judge you either. And I think we've got too much judgment in our world. I mean, I remember people in my family that follow a different lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to judge them. It's not my job. They're a human being. My job is to accept them.
Yeah, I think.
But I think there's a good message here, and I'll shut up after I say this. Like the Pope the other day made a comment.
I know where you're going with this.
And Eric took a comment completely out of context. He never said that gerrymanders were allowed. He said he thinks they should be civil unions, not church unions. But the Pope, where he is, Pope Francis, because he said it, people take things out of context.
Right.
And that's so true about anything that we do. The point is, you have to accept something at its value and not try to read into it. And we try so hard to read into it because we think we know all this stuff. In my opinion, the person trying to read in something is probably the dumbest one in the room.
Yeah. You could not have said it best, man. Stephen Hudson, Dr. Hudson, I refer to him as my friend, an interesting individual for sure. And I love every single moment I've had, an interaction I've had with you, Steve. It's been a pleasure every single time I get to talk to you. It's one of those conversations I grow more every time I speak with you. You know, I thank you for taking the time to be with us here today. We spoke about a little bit about music. We spoke a little bit about current events. We spoke about a little bit about film and Star Wars collection. But nonetheless, you know, we definitely spoke some truth. And you know, I'm gonna end with this story here. If we take it at face value, what others told us, then we're gonna be very disappointed. However, understanding the big picture and trying to do a minimal amount of research in the form of communicating, we come to a better understanding. 2020 has brought us with a whirlwind of problems, but one event that typically impacted myself was at the beginning of 2020. We spoke about, where were you during JFK, during Challenger, during 9/11. I'll tell you where I was when I heard about the helicopter crash with Kobe Bryant. Mm-hmm. I woke up to the news and you know, all I saw was my children, my daughters. And I hugged them, told them I loved them. And just to see how a world mourns one individual person for the love he brought to everybody, that transcends the ages, in my opinion. He never told you how to think. He never told you who to believe in, but through his actions in sports, through the game of basketball, he taught so many people about life. Rest in peace, Kobe Bryant. It was a beautiful time seeing him on TV. Yeah, big Laker fan myself. But nonetheless, man, it brought tears to an entire world, not just a nation, a world. That right there, in my opinion, is godly. Dr. Hudson, it's been a pleasure. Any last message to our viewers?
No, just thank you very much for the invitation, and it was a pleasure talking to you.
Let's give me one song that we can end with. Like we can definitely sign off here on this one.
Now that's dangerous. What genre do you want to play?
Let's go with this one right here. Here we go. Oh man.
Now, so you could have done the Imperial March, which is very
only because I'm going to watch The Mandalorian pretty soon. So, again, Dr. Hudson, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for everything that you do for our kids. Thank you for everything you do in my life and everybody's life. One last thing. Is there anything that people should know? Where can they find you? Where can they reach you? Should they want to reach you? Do you have any social media?
Actually, I'm on LinkedIn.
Awesome. So, Stephen Hudson on LinkedIn.
There's a couple of us, but... just look for the one that says McAllen High School.
All right. You heard it here first. Stephen Hudson, McAllen High School, LinkedIn, if you want to get in touch with Dr. Stephen Hudson. This is it for episode number 3. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.